Mrs. Eddy by Hugh Studdard Kennedy. Chapter 29. Calvin Fry. Calvin A. Fry was born on August 24, 1845, in Fry Village, Massachusetts. Fry Village is now a part of Andover, and had originally been known as Fry's Mills because it first appeared as a settlement around the sawmill and gristmill of Enoch Fry II, who was Calvin's grandfather. The Frys were an old New England family with worthy records in the War of the Revolution and that of 1812. Enoch Fry III, Calvin's father, was born at the turn of the century, and as his father, Enoch II, was prospering, and he himself early developed a desire for learning, he was sent, first of all, to Phillips Academy at Andover, and later to Harvard, whence he graduated in 1821. At Harvard, he was in distinguished company, for his class was the class of Ralph Waldo Emerson, Samuel Hatch, Edward Loring, and Francis Cabot. And before their graduation, they all agreed to hold a reunion every year for 50 years. Enoch Fry III remained faithful to the agreement. He was present at the 50th and last reunion of his class at Cambridge in 1871. He had not, however, been able to fulfill his early promise, for he had hardly left college and started on a career of teaching, which might have led to still better things, when he was stricken down with a serious illness which left him incurably lame and not too strong, and so he returned to Andover, where he subsequently opened a small grocery store. Meanwhile, he had married one Lydia Barnard. They had four children, of whom Calvin was the third. Small grocery stores in small towns were no more remunerative 100 years ago than they are today. And Calvin and his brother, Oscar, had to go early to work. And so, after attending public school in Andover, Calvin was apprenticed as a machinist and worked in Davis and Ferber's machine shops in East Andover. Early in the 60s, the family moved to Lawrence, a manufacturing town close by. And shortly afterwards, when he was 26, Calvin married Miss Ada E. Brush of Lowell. She lived but 1 year, and after her death, Calvin went back to his father's house in Lawrence. It was a sad household. While the children were still young, the mother had become insane, and although she had lucid intervals, she had to be sent away periodically to an institution. The father was a cripple and a semi-invalid, and Calvin's sister, Lydia Rofe, who lived with them, had been early widowed. After the loss of his young wife, Calvin would not find much in his father's house to put him in better heart. But the Frys were essentially of that New England temperament that takes trouble with a kind of placid resignation not to be found elsewhere. They were all members of the Congregational Church and attended services regularly, but their religion was to them not so much a comfort as one of the unquestioned necessities of life, wherein the only real stimulus was derived from the avoidance of backsliding. To a thought such as this, Christian Science, if it could be accepted at all, would come almost as a bewildering light. And so it literally did to Calvin Fry. He and his sister, Lydia, first heard of it from their sister-in-law, Mrs. Oscar Fry. The Oscar Frys lived in Boston and had become interested in the new teaching to the extent of attending some of the Sunday afternoon meetings in Hawthorne Hall. Mrs. Fry's thoughts, as she heard the testimonies of healing, naturally turned to the insane mother in Lawrence, and at last she talked to Clara Choate about it, with the result that Mrs. Choate consented to take the case and do what she could to help. Within a very short time, to the utter amazement of Lydia and Calvin, their mother was completely restored. In a lucid interval after her second commitment to an asylum, she had begged the family not to send her away from the home again in any circumstances. And for years before she was restored through Christian Science, Lydia had done little else but care for her. And now her mother was well. Neither Lydia nor Calvin hesitated a moment. They would learn all they could about the teaching, which had done such wonderful things. And so Calvin went off at once to Lynn to see Mrs. Eddy and joined a class she was then holding. It was hardly over when the pitiful little tragedy of the defection of the students in Lynn occurred. And Calvin Fry, it will be remembered, was one of the two students who remained faithful and watched with their teacher through the wretched night which followed. When Mrs. Eddy left Lynn for Boston, Calvin returned to Lawrence and immediately began to devote all his spare time to the work of healing. So things went until early one morning in August 1882, he received a telegram. It was from Barton, Vermont, from Mrs. Eddy, telling him that she was that morning setting out for Boston and asking him to meet her at Plymouth. Calvin made his decision at once. He packed a few things in order to be ready for any contingency and set out for Plymouth. It was a momentous move, for it changed the whole course of his life. From the time he joined her at Plymouth and traveled with her, as he did, to Boston, Calvin Fry never left Mrs. Eddy for a single day until she passed away 28 years later. History records few such devotions. The Mrs. Eddy that Calvin Fry met at Plymouth was a very different person from the forlorn, almost defeated woman who had made her way from Boston to the little town of Barton a short 2 months before. The first few weeks had been for her a veritable Gethsemane. There was no clear light anywhere. The little circle at Lynn was broken up, and the larger circle in Boston, which had promised so well, was shaken and dismayed. And in the death of her husband, she had lost not only a companion and friend, but one of her chiefest supports in her work. She was 62, at an age when most people have almost rounded out their life's task. She had only just begun. And now it must have seemed as if even that beginning was being swept away. Nevertheless, Although the sorrow must have been real enough, and at times poignant past belief, it never seems to have done more, even from the first, than endure for the night. In Arthur Buswell's old homestead at Barton, she was surrounded with love and kindness, which she most needed, and gradually the light came again. "I have never found a kindlier people," she writes to her friend Clara Choate. "I am situated as pleasantly as I can be in the absence of the one true heart that has been so much to me. Oh, darling, I never shall master this point of missing him all the time. But I can try, and am trying as I must, to sever all the cords that bind me to person or things material." How well she succeeded as the weeks passed is seen in Arthur Buswell's account of those days. However ill she might have been the night before, each day found her planning for the future of her church and college, arranging for lectures to be given by students, looking about for new practitioners, and tirelessly devising means to extend the movement. By the middle of July, she had quite clearly won her way through and is found writing to Clara Choate, "Hold the fort, for I am coming. Be wise as a serpent and harmless as the doves that are cooing at my window. I hope my 40 days in the wilderness are about over." That they were indeed over is quickly seen. Something had happened to Mary at Barton, which was to change the whole tempo of her life, if not its course. There is no record of the talk she had with Calvin Fry as the train took them from Plymouth to Boston, or of the plans for the future they discussed, but that the period of tentative action and uncertainty was over is clear. From the moment she reached the Boston and Main station in Boston on that August evening in 1882, she carried things forward and was herself carried with an impulsion which, within the space of a few short years, was to make her teaching one of the most discussed subjects in the United States and far beyond its borders. Within a few days of her reaching Boston, she had reopened the Metaphysical College, and shortly afterwards moved its headquarters from number 569 to number 571 Columbus Avenue. The new house was slightly larger and more convenient. The lecture room was established on the first floor, and another room on the same floor as a general office. The rest of the house was occupied by Mrs. Eddy and some of her students, who lived on a cooperative plan and used the office on the first floor in rotation to meet their patients. Among the students who lived there from the first were the faithful Julia Bartlett, Abby Whiting, Hanover Smith, Arthur Buswell, and Calvin Fry. It was Calvin Fry who at once and quite naturally took charge, and he did it with that amazing adaptability which enabled him in after years to fill uncomplainingly and with great efficiency every conceivable position in Mrs. Eddy's household. Mrs. Eddy rightly described him once as her man of all work. he could serve equally well in the capacity of coachman, secretary, treasurer, real estate agent, major domo, and general manager. In the new headquarters in Boston, it was Calvin Fry who supervised the household, did the marketing, engaged the servants, paid the bills, interviewed tradesmen, and in his spare time helped Mrs. Eddy with her letters, ran errands for her, and was ready to represent her on any and every occasion. A quiet, soft-spoken man, not specially small, but giving the impression of smallness. A man who moved about unobtrusively and always appeared to be on hand when he was wanted. In the 1880s, his hair was dark, and a flowing mustache, after the fashion of the day, merged into a pair of full mutton chop whiskers. 20 years later, the hair was white and the mutton chop whiskers had gone, but it is the same Calvin Fry. He changed very little, and from the first displayed those qualities of devotion and efficiency which always characterized his association with Mrs. Eddy. He was just what Mrs. Eddy most needed. Years afterwards, she was to tell him that he had done more for the cause of Christian Science than any other one of her followers. She needed, especially in these early years, someone who would be almost her second self, who, in the stress of work, would do what she wanted to have done as she would do it, carrying out her wishes exactly to the letter without the friction of questions or criticism. She found such a one in Calvin Fry.